Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Here's a brief but annoying message to let you know that you could have first heard this episode 9 months ago if you were a subscriber to our Iron Filing Society Patreon offering.
For the price of a pint and a St. Clement's each month, you can get up to 4 episodes a week, 9 months before the rest of the world gets them. Early access to regular episodes, lots of other marvellous benefits, and there's absolutely no adverts or brief but annoying messages like this that will get right on your tics.
Find out more and subscribe now at tftimemachine.com/ironfilings.
Here we go. Here we go. Here we go, here we go, here we go, here we go. This is it.
This is Top Flight Time Machine. I'm Andy Dawson. Pow, pow, pow.
I'm Sam Delaney. So what?
Oh, it's the Snow White Odyssey. We're looking at Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs, the Disney classic, for reasons which I'm unsure. But here we are now, so let's just go with it. I mean, I've said it before, Sam, this is your passion project almost, isn't it?
It is, yeah. I'm delighted to be doing this.
You're taking the lead of this
one.
What
I really hope is that people will reassess. For many years, Disney, I think less so now, but Disney was regarded almost, the word itself was almost like a dirty word. And there was a lot of snobbery. Yeah. And when I had my daughter, there was some other parents.
When
I first spawned a child from my loins.
From my guts.
Sir, I have terrible news. Your guts are infertile. You have infertile guts.
But I thought all of that business emitted from the balls. Yes, but the balls are linked to the guts, sir.
What
it feeds? All stems from the guts.
Ask yourself this. Who feed the balls feed the penis, but who feeds the balls? The guts, sir. Tell me this, sir. Are you
and
a
who
fan
feeds
of,
the guts? Have you the been, heart?
Have you been consuming and, enough brandy and sausages? That's the way to render your guts efficient and fertile.
The guts are fed by the heart. And when you are in love and you want to emit your seed, where does that all come from? Why, it's the heart and
pumping.
Love.
Pump in as hard as it can, day and
heart
night.
To the guts, to
the feed
balls,
your hungry
to the
guts.
Cock.
To feed your hungry guts, which pass on your seed to the gaping mouth of your ball bag, which then in turn spits it out via your helmet. And there we have it, the beautiful world of reproduction.
It in spits it out.
Poetic harmony.
Spits it out via what I don't believe they refer to as the Jap's eye anymore. For reasons of common decency.
What a wonderful thing Mother Nature has created in man. His guts, his balls, his Jap's eye, all working together in perfect unison. What a sight to behold. Truly, truly, it is a marvellous spectacle that makes one dearly believe that there is a God, an intelligent designer somewhere.
And if you are doing homeschooling of your kids at the moment during this pandemic and you need to do, you know, biology and human reproduction, feel free to play them that. Yeah, Lex out there, because it's all there.
Sergio Aguero's teaching Spanish for the BBC at the moment.
They should have got me in that.
They should have got me and you into... Oh, I'm doing Spanish on Duolingo app. It's one
are
of
you?
The things... That, yeah, I've been...
Is
I
it
thought,
good?
It's bloody great, mate. It's really
is it
great.
Is it easy to do?
Real easy. Real easy, yeah.
Hey, like, when are you doing it? When you're running or...?
No, just at home sitting about. Which is
fucking hell. Well, it was Larry Leisure.
Because it's Spanish, I thought, you know, best way to learn Spanish is to get in, like method style, into the mindset of a Spaniard.
So I go full this and that.
Oh, fucking hell.
Just sit about. Yeah. Sit about outdoors. Saying Spanish words. I speak a little bit of French. I speak an even littler bit of Italian. So I thought, so I could have gone for either of them. And I thought, no, fuck that. I'll go Spanish. I don't speak any Spanish, but I fucking love Spain. And
me too.
Yeah. Largely because of your influence, I now have a dream of living in Mallorca full time at some point in my life.
Well, we'll do it together. We'll do it in adjoining rigs and just keep knocking the podcast out.
Yeah, top five time machine towers. It'll be like Tracy Island.
Yeah, we'll be like two Ray Winstons in Sexy Beast.
That's what my dream is, apart from when Ben Kingsley turns up and starts acting the cunt.
That's not good.
I could
good,
do
is
without
it?
That. That'll be like if my brother Cass comes out.
I watched it. It was on again last week. Yeah. Can I tell you something that might blow your mind? That film is 20 years old, Sam.
Fucking hell.
Yeah.
I remember looking forward to that coming out.
Mm.
If you see what I mean. I remember I still
regard it as a recent film.
It's a contemporary gangster film that really moved the genre on.
20 fucking years. God.
What a movie.
Anyway.
But, learned a bit of Spanish. Can't remember how we got onto that. Tracy Island, I would love us to have in Mallorca, a Tracy Island style rig, you know. And you know, like Don Simpson and Jerry Bruckheimer had matching black Ferraris, and they had identical twin personal assistants as well.
Yeah.
One each.
We could get into that quite easily.
We could even have matching cats.
We could deep dive the Don Simpson book, couldn't we?
That's a hell of a book. What a book. High concept. There's a lot of great Hollywood books that would warrant deep diving. The other real, I think the one that's even better than the Don Simpson one is the Robert Evans, The Kid Stays in the Picture.
Yes.
Fucking sensational. Great film adaptation of that as well.
It is. Yeah, plenty of time in our hands.
Anyway, let's get back to know what I'm happy about is what I was saying about when I first had produced a child from my guts was that there was middle class parents, including fathers. Bit sexist, but it's usually the mums who get uptight about what the kids watch, right? But I remember sitting in a pub and some middle-class dads sort of going, I don't let my children watch any Disney. And I sort of thought to myself, why? And they didn't fucking know why. It was cultural snobbery. They hadn't really applied any fucking intellectual analysis to anything. They just thought it was a thing you said to look as if you were a good parent and that, you know... Mm. You were a little bit fucking posher than the next cunt. And I just thought, what is your problem with it? But everyone sort of, for a few years, seemed, Disney, I mean, it teaches such awful stereotypes or whatever. I don't fucking know. But I always let my kids watch it. And my daughter loved it. And I'd seen Snow White.
I let my kids watch it and they seem to enjoy it. So what's so fucking wrong with that then?
Fucking nothing. Right. Fucking right. Because, you know, follow your instincts. Yeah, I also showed my kids Rocky IV once, and they both cried when Apollo Creed died, so I switched it off and never showed it to them
again.
You've got
to learn and just, you know, feel your way through
these
things, haven't you?
I didn't say, keep watching, it gets better, don't worry, Rocky does the comedy in the end, he gets his revenge, right? I said, all right, fair enough, you're crying because you've just watched a man being beaten to death by Dolph Lundgren. On reflection, that probably isn't appropriate viewing. So I will switch this off and watch it alone later. And I've never shown it to them again. But there was no tears or anything watching Snow White. There was just joy. Oh. And therefore, I was happy for her to continue watching it. But during that period when she was really obsessed with it, I just became more and more obsessed and found it, saw the humour in it, right? And since it's just become the sort of film that I can never get enough of. I can always watch again because it's always funny. So that, and I hope that some people are. I know some people listening have gone onto Disney Plus or wherever and had a little rewatch and seen it in a new light. We are at the stage where we are first meeting the dwarfs. They are in their diamond mine that they have.
Yes,
and it is fucking great. This diamond mine. There are diamonds everywhere. It's not the sort of diamond mine like you get in Sierra Leone where you've got to dig quite a lot all day to find one tiny bit of diamond. There are diamonds all over the shop. It's a piece of piss. However, health and safety wise, it's a nightmare. It looks very fragile. They're down deep in some caves. They've got a few bits of sort of wooden beam holding things up.
Yeah,
but there's seven of them now. I'd wager that there was originally a lot more. and that there's been several accidents. Now, you're from the north.
They're all operating in a very small area as well. I mean, there's a fuckload of diamonds just in that little area that they're in there.
They've also got a very delicate-looking deer. So in those olden days, down in a mine, they would have obviously had, you know, probably a horse and cart down there. There's a rail that they've rigged up for a horse and cart to go along, which presumably collects the diamonds and takes it out to the lift shaft, right? But they've not got a donkey or a mule, like most people would have. They've got a fucking deer, like Bambi, doing it, which seems peculiar.
Maybe that was a product placement. Knowing they were going to do Bambi in the future, and
the
they were just kind of like.
Was Bambi, yeah. So they were lining.
What's the next one, Bambi?
I think that's it what was. It is then, isn't it? So they were planting a seed in people's heads. That's what like, it is, hey, look at that. Ever thought about how awesome deers are? Yeah. You are now, though, aren't you?
You don't even know what a deer is, do you? But there's one. It's doing a fucking good job.
Look at that.
Stick
working
around.
Working deer, that is. Working deer. Right. Now, you are from the north, and you are a podcaster. But
correct.
I assume, being from the north, you are the first person in generations of Dawsons not to be a miner of some sort. And for that reason, I'm assuming you have insight to what goes on down in mines. And although you think, well, dwarves, fucking obvious candidates for mine work because they can get in all the small nooks and crannies, their safety gear is not what I imagine your forefathers went to work in.
No, I would say not. I mean, my father wasn't a miner.
Right.
He was a mechanic. My grandfather was a miner.
Right.
But he was an electrician down the mines, so he didn't do the actual mining.
He had to put the electrics in down there.
He did the electrics. he was a small man. He was about 5 foot five, I reckon. Maybe five. Yeah, about 5 foot, 5'5". And his nickname was Tot. His name was Thomas, but his nickname was Tot. He actually would have been 101 this week.
Did you put a picture of him? See the granddad you put a picture up of recently? Yeah,
that's the one who was on the social media.
Nice looking bloke he was.
Yeah, that was Tot. I like to think that if he'd lived to be 101, he wouldn't have survived. But there you go.
No,
you don't know,
he'd,
do you?
He'd be as dead as a doorpost now, so it's probably best
he's
out of the way.
All nice and dead. But he used to be down the mine, a small man. I don't know about safety equipment, but I do know that on one occasion he did try and jump a lift on a coal truck that was underground that was going at about 60 miles an hour, and he fell off as it went around a corner and was seriously injured. But that's the kind of thing that happened down there, I think. It was a free-for-all.
What did he think of... What did he tell you about life in the mine? Did he enjoy it? Or was it just like, well, it's just something you've got to do?
The impression I got from him and from other relatives that worked down there was fucking awful. And that they wouldn't wish it on anybody.
Right.
But that's kind of all you could do, wasn't it?
Was going.
This was kind of why I got
they
a bit
upset.
They hadn't
invented podcasting then, so...
Or call centres, which kind of replaced the mines.
Yeah.
It was either mining or shipbuilding up here, pretty much. You'd walk out of school and you walk into a job in the mines or the shipyards.
And I suppose shipbuilding was much colder. That would probably be my point of view if I was making a choice.
Yeah, at least thinking, if you were down the mine, you'd be all nice and hot.
I'd be thinking mining, very claustrophobic, and you get all sorts of terrible lung conditions.
Mm-hmm. And hot as well, yeah.
But I hate the cold. I'm very sensitive to cold. So being out like in November, December, January time, fucking doing whatever shipbuilders do, bashing bits of fucking steel together, that would be nightmarish too, wouldn't it?
This was, I think probably out of the two of them, mining were probably the most homoerotic, mining and shipbuilding, because there's lots of sweat, fellas with their shirts off and all that sort of thing.
Lots of muscular men.
Yeah,
you have to be pretty strong.
Yeah,
all that manual labour every day, you'd have rippling biceps and covered then, in soot and perspiration.
Yeah, and all showering together at the end of the day as well.
Yeah,
but I don't think you'd get that level of homoeroticism in the shipyards.
Shipbuilding, you just have to go home and have a bath.
Fuck off,
a tin bath as well. I'd
probably go to the pub for a few hours first, and then So,
I remember reading my insight to northern industrial life was reading Sons and Lovers for A level, and that was set in Nottingham, and that painted a horrible picture of it. But what it did do is make me think about, you know, why people became alcoholics. This is before I was one, and they went because it was just like they described how awful it was, and then at the end of the day, the dad. He couldn't face going home. right? Mm. Because he had to do something rather than just being a black hole all day. So he'd go and spend what little money they paid him, and he would just drink until he was sufficiently pissed to stumble home and collapse into bed. Mm. And, that, you know, when he got home, his wife would give him loads of shit and all the rest of it. But you sort of thought, you know, no wonder Mr. What were their fucking names? Anyway, you know, I could see the strong connection between alcoholism and that kind of life. But then, of course, I became a problem drinker. And, you know, I've never had to do a solid day's manual labour in my life, ever. Let's be honest.
You worked in the media.
Yeah, yeah. My hands are soft.
But it was completely, completely different how things are because you'd have, you know, the mines and the collieries, they'd each have, you know, male voice choirs and brass bands and all that sort of thing. There was a culture around it.
Community,
and
yeah.
And you don't get that with...
Call centres
quite so much. I don't think there's very many call centre calls. Yeah, there's not so much of that. But then everyone was all in it together, I suppose.
Thatcher destroyed society, mate, and shutting those big industrial nerve centres down was just one of the ways. I mean, because if you think about it, there could still be within, say, the gig economy, whether that is Uber drivers or Deliveroo riders or whatever, call centre workers. Why shouldn't there be a community and a culture amongst them? There isn't because I think maybe the whole of society's mindset shifted.
Yeah.
Jalapeño.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile.
With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Jalapeño.
I mean, I look back at their lives and I don't know how much my granddad got paid being down the mine. But they lived in a two-bedroom cottage, which was owned by the colliery. Mm. So they rented it from them, but it was obviously a favourable rent because they worked for the colliery anyway. And they had a caravan in North Yorkshire that they spent their weekends at. You know, they had a static caravan, which obviously wasn't cheap.
Mm.
But they were earning enough to be able to have that and run that as a second home sort of thing. And lots of their friends had similar sorts of things as well going on. And now, if you have a caravan, fucking hell, they're about 20 grand or something, minimum. So yeah. I think that's kind of been upscaled out of the reach of most, you know, ordinary working people.
How,
I don't know.
How is this fixed? Do you think it's simple or do you think it's complicated to fix this? Because remember that guy last year who I interviewed, the one when I went mental at the bloke on the reception, who I then worked out was probably had a few issues with his mental health.
Mm-hmm.
Remember that?
Yeah.
And the guy I was interviewing was called Rutger Bregman, and he wrote this book where he was just like, just give everyone a universal minimum wage.
Yeah.
Just give minimum income. Just give everyone 12 grand. The state can afford it, and then see how the cards land, because all the evidence seems to suggest that most people will automatically turn that into more money for themselves and for the state.
Yeah.
That is in most people's human nature. Maybe that's the solution.
I was not hugely convinced about that beforehand, but now, right now, where we're at,
yeah,
a month into this pandemic, absolutely 100% do that right now, because so many people are being asked to jump through so many hoops in order to claim money that the government say is there for them, self-employed people especially. Just fucking give everyone 12 grand. So there you go.
Yeah.
Or grand a month, whatever.
Yeah.
There you go. It's not perfect, but...
it's an investment, one of the studies he had was they gave something like 12 long-term homeless people in the City of London 12 grand each as an experiment, right? Some sort of research centre. Just identify people who've been living rough in the City of London for a long time. And I think all bar one ended up, you know, 2 years on, off the streets, in employment, earning more than 12 grand a year. Only one out of the 12 sort of went off radar and spent it on booze and drugs, which is what? There's an assumption. And you need data to disprove these assumptions, but there is an assumption amongst some people that if you give out free money, that money will be frittered away. But all the evidence that he had suggested that it wouldn't be. And I think there will be evidence coming out. There'll be a lot more data on all of this on the other side of this pandemic crisis.
Well, this is it. You know, we've got no idea if we started doing that now, how that would pan out over the next year, because we don't know what the next year is even going to be, what anything's going to be worth. But there has to be a safety net for absolutely fucking everybody, and there clearly isn't at the minute. I'm seeing loads of tweets from people who are just saying, I've just left a freelance contract and I'm between jobs or whatever, and I don't qualify for being furloughed, but I don't qualify as self-employed either, so I've got nothing. And that's disgusting, that there's people that's got nothing in this thing that's no one's fault.
Yeah, I think the one thing I'd say is, and, you know, anyone who listens to this regularly knows that I'm not someone who's, you know, would defend this government or anything. But I do think of all these things is that, like, no government really would have ever have been fully prepared for something as random as this. And my only hope, because I always like to have a bit of hope, and it's often misplaced, is that, you know, bit by bit over the last 6 weeks, the government have stepped up and offered new... They've identified new people with vulnerabilities and tried to help or address it. Maybe not perfectly. And so you think that each time they do a new wave of bailouts, let's say, or whatever you want to call it, assistance, they then will get pressured by other groups who go, well, hang on, what about us? And then on the whole, I like to think that they're going to respond to that. Do you know what I mean? Once these groups emerge and have a voice, they keep responding. Because even if you buy into the idea that all Tories are inherently cruel, right, which I actually don't, I mean, I think a lot of them are, but I don't think all of them automatically are. Even if they are just entirely practically minded, right, and are aware that, you know, their own people need the economy to survive and keep going and not plummet, then it makes, even if you take all emotion out of it, it makes total practical sense to make sure everyone is kept afloat.
I think in terms of money, I think they are doing the right thing in general, but I think they're being dragged towards each next step that they do. They could have done universal basic income, for example, on day one, but they're not going to do that because if they drag it out for a few weeks, then it saves them billions almost because... Yeah. They're not doing it all immediately, but I don't buy the thing. No one was prepared for this because there's been pandemic preparations going on all around the world for years and years now. And I think some countries have dealt with this better than others, and this one has dealt with it atrociously, I reckon. You're listening to the Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs deep dive here you. On Top Flight.
I like Machine. This Chancellor. What's his name again?
I can't remember.
Rassi Shuchek.
Something like that.
Right. I don't know, mate.
Do you?
I know you won't like him, right? But there's some, despite myself, I like the bloke. He looks smooth. He looks slick. Yeah. I like the cut of his jib. I like the way that he keeps doing press conferences where he hands out billions of pounds. I think, yeah, I like you. And I think he'll be the next Prime Minister.
Quite possibly, but it's that thing. Well, I think Michael Gove will be the next one. I think that's been lined up.
Yeah,
but
probably.
I think it's that thing where they've been they're doing things when they absolutely have to be done. They're being reactive instead of being proactive about it all. But there you go. That's where we're at.
Well,
these dwarfs then.
Everyone who's out there, you know, our analysis counts for nothing, and you know, all we can do is say our heart goes out to you. We know there's a lot of people who are struggling. We all are, but some even worse than the rest of us. And all we can do is keep pumping out this bullshit about things like Snow White to hopefully bring a little bit of happiness or joy to your day. We have failed to do that so far because we've just been talking about this shit. So let's get back into Snow White. They're down in the mine. None of them have got any safety or protective wear on. They're all just wearing their silly floppy hats, which are a bit like those beanie hats that David Beckham used to like.
That's right, yeah. Very, very lax. And look at the diamonds as well. They're very easy to mine, aren't they? They're
just using piece of piss. Easy
job. I mean,
they've
got the pickaxes, but they can prize them out with a pickaxe.
Yeah. They're not even hard to find. It's like, you know when you do an Easter egg hunt for your kids, but you make it really easy for them to find. Not as they get older, but when they're younger, you just literally egg on a fucking table and go, can you find the egg? Try looking right in front of you, you dickhead. It's there.
Yeah,
right?
It's fucking obvious and it's frustrating, isn't it?
Yeah, you're like, fucking hell, look right in fucking front of you.
Especially if it's fucking cold or raining or something.
Yeah, you just want to get
in. Jesus Christ.
Anyway, it's like that.
You found them all now. Let's go in.
Yeah, give me one of them as well. I'm starving. Can we have one now? Yes, you can have that for your breakfast. You can have that Cadbury's cream egg for your breakfast. I think there's fruit in it. Right, don't have the caramel one, because that's more of a treat. So the diamonds are fucking everywhere. They're a piece of piss. It's easy peasy, and they're all singing. They've put Sleepy in charge of the deer and cart, which to my mind's a big mistake because, you know, he's constantly falling asleep, isn't he? By definition.
Are we at the bit where he's whacked the deer with the fucking whip or the stick or whatever it is?
Yeah, it's a bit unkind.
Have we had that yet? Quite rightly, the deer rears up and spills diamonds everywhere.
Now, you can also see Dopey. Dopey's job is to sweep up the iffy, the snide diamonds that Doc, who is sort of like their de facto leader, right? He's certainly the one who's the least fucking stupid, right? He looks at them all with one of them those eyepieces that diamond experts use, which, by the way, I would love to have one of those, wouldn't you?
Me too. Jeweler's eyepiece, they call it.
Jeweler's eyepiece. That sounds like something from the Viz Profanosaurus, though, doesn't it? I can imagine a Viz annual being called the jeweler's eyepiece.
It's probably in there, yeah.
But he looks at them. He examines them. And by the way, they say it's a diamond mine, but there's all different colours of gemstone. There's green ones, red ones, blue ones, the lot. So this is
emeralds, all sorts,
It's a multi-gem mine, which I've never heard of, but anyway, so they dig them out, they take them out, they give them to Doc looks at them through his eyepiece, and the ones he doesn't think are legit, he just fucking lobs on the floor. And then Dopey's got a dustpan and brush, but he hasn't got the fucking the stand-up ones. You know,
the Bernard Langer.
He hasn't got a Bernard Langer because this is olden times. So he's having to bend over and sweep them all up.
It's a fucking backbreaker, isn't it?
A lot of people have compared Dopey to me physically. And I've got to say, I wouldn't take it as a compliment, but I have to hold my hands up and say, yeah, I can see the similarities. He's got rubbery features, big ears and a bald head. And I would say that's pretty. I would say if I look like any of the seven dwarves, it's him. I haven't decided which one you look like yet.
Okay, we'll get right to that. But he's sweeping them up, and he's just, was he doing chucking them in the river? He just chucks them away, doesn't he?
Yeah, well, he's.
He's dopey.
Look, he's all confused now. He's found two diamonds that Doc's not spotted yet, and he's delighted by it. So the silly bastard puts one in each eye, right? As a joke. To try and impress or amuse Doc. And Doc looks at him and gets quite fucked off and whacks him around the head so they fall out again. So this is the sort of dynamic that they're kind of matey, bam, but at the same time, there's a lot of friction. We're fucking working here. It's not fucking playtime, Dopey.
Yeah, a lot of creative tension. Probably a bit like being in Radiohead.
Yeah, exactly. And Doc as the Tom York character.
Yeah,
and
definitely.
Dopey's more like Ed O'Brien.
Yeah.
The fun one of the gang.
Yeah. Definitely.
Don't know the names of any of the others. Or I did, I've forgotten.
There's one. There's Johnny, isn't there?
Johnny Greenwood.
Yeah. So it's 5 o'clock. Shift's over.
And now this is the most famous song, probably, isn't it? Off they go.
But as we decided last week, not the best one.
No, Inner Mine is the best one, which we covered. Yeah. They simply, there's very lax security. They simply put all of their precious jewels inside some sacks, which they don't even tie up, some Hessian sacks.
They're in the vault.
And then they lob them in this place called the vault, which just has a pretty simple chub lock. Yeah. And hilariously, they've left Dopey in charge of lockup. And once he's locked it up, he hangs the key on a hook right outside
the
door.
Door.
So there's no point in locking it anyway. And there are quite literally, at today's valuations, billions of pounds worth of diamonds inside this vault. Yeah. Billions, right?
Anyone could take over this thing overnight. Even some slightly bigger dwarfs could take over.
Yeah, yeah. So they must be dependent entirely on the fact that no other cunt lives around here. They must be like, it doesn't really matter. No fucker ever comes through this part of the
woods. Where are these diamonds going, though? Where are they going? Who's the recipients? And why are no questions being asked about the source?
Well, one thing I know, is that the Queen had, when we saw her at the beginning, she had a lot of jewels. She had a lot of bling in her rig. Mm. And you remember she'd commissioned that special bejeweled box to keep the heart in.
For the heart, yeah.
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 And that had plenty of jewels in. So maybe that's a little backstory or side story like they do in the Star Wars universe about how, in fact, the dwarves were on our payroll. We don't work for anyone directly. We're an independent collective of miners. But we have several different contracts with different clients. To be honest, our biggest client, our most lucrative client over the last 5 to 10 years has certainly been the Wicked Queen. I mean, we have a regular, consistent order from her monthly for a certain amount of jewels, and that is a guaranteed contracted amount, and that we know will cover our overheads, right?
She makes a lot of boxes to keep a lot of organs in.
But two or three times a year, she'll do a special commission above and beyond the contract. It might be, I need a special ornamental box to keep a child's heart inside, for instance. Or it might just be a new hat with gemstones in it. Whatever that might be, we will mark it up substantially. And, to be honest, there are other folk around the kingdom who ask for jewels, but she's definitely the best one, which is what made it so difficult for us to have to play a part in her death. I better not get ahead of myself.
Spoilers.
Yeah.
I mean, right, that's it, because we're at the stage now. They're leaving at the end of the day's work.
Which is a great feeling, isn't it? For anyone in any line of work.
We'll find out what happens next in the next episode.
Yeah.
I think we've covered about 2 minutes of the film today.
Yeah. But
that's all right.
But a lot of meaning in it. So all the best. Good luck. Stay well.
Yes.
And you know, night-night.
Goodbye.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.